You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave with a very special Christmas Eve edition of Packers Therapy. We were talking before we started recording, Dave. We don't know if we've ever actually done a podcast on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but I would think after, what, 13, or this is our 14th season, I think, of Packers Therapy, that we must have done it at some point, but it's odd. You know, it's also odd to be doing it when the sun's out. I mean, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, Santa is probably on his way from Klaus's house. That is right. Santa Claus. Is that to her?
Wait a minute.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, he had a, I was wondering about the beard, you know,
well,
when Klaus was visiting, he did have a beard, and maybe he's a jolly old elf who's also a gynecologist.
Well, I've never seen Santa and Dr. Klaus in the same place at the same time.
You've got a point there.
So okay. We got to investigate that a little bit more.
Well, that'll do it for Packers Therapy. Packers come up with a win, a very entertaining win in overtime. They beat the New York Football Jets 44-38 in overtime. So I guess that was satisfying for some people. Dave, was it satisfying for you that they won when, in fact, in the big picture, they may have hurt themselves because they slid down a bit in the draft selection list?
Yeah, I tweeted all through the game that my position is I wanted no one to get hurt, I want no one to look foolish, but I wanted them to lose. And actually, the more it looked like it was going to go down in flames, I mean, there was like dumpster fire and other things that were being mentioned. I mean, it was entertaining, but it wasn't entertaining till the, you know, second half, and then later in the second half, it looked like a disaster for a while. But I thought I wanted them maybe to look okay, have some bright spots, but I wanted them to lose. And I think that's the big debate right now. I haven't really been listening to other podcasts or the talk shows or anything, but I think everyone's kind of talking about whether you wanted him to win or to lose. And you know, the thing is, I don't think it's stupid to think that they want to lose, or stupid to think that you wanted them to win. I think it all comes down to your perspective, and it comes back to something we've talked about a lot before, is are you a destination person or are you a journey person? And I am a destination person, which is I want, and I think at some point during the season I said I was wanting to change more to be a journey person. That's still true. I aspire to be a journey person. I really want to be a journey person, but and push comes to shove, I'm more of a destination person. I want them to win the Super Bowl. And getting to the Super Bowl this year is impossible. It can't happen. There's no Rocky formula that's going to get them to win the Super Bowl in 2018. It's possible in 2019, and their chances of doing that are better if they have a better draft pick. And it's not just in the first round, but it's all the rounds after that. Therefore, it was fun to watch them win. I didn't jump up and cheer that last touchdown. It was kind of like, oh, what do you know? Look at that. Was my perspective, really, because I was okay with them losing. I wanted them to lose. And when they won, it was kind of a letdown a little bit. And I'm not less of a Packers fan. I just am a destination person. And I would like, you know, come, what is it, April or May? When is the draft? I guess
late April, early May.
May
it's been around there, yeah.
When they're picking seventh, that I'll be super excited about that. But now they're picking 14th. That's what they picked last year, which they got a good player. But I was disappointed. But no one got hurt too bad, which was good, which was the other reason I wanted at least Rodgers to sit. That's another question. But I was not super happy that they won. I was mildly entertained at the end, but I was not extremely happy. And don't call me less of a Packer fan because of it. I'm just a big picture destination person. But how about you?
Well, you know who is a journey person?
Who?
Steve Perry.
Hmm. I was trying to think of his name the other day. I kept saying,
Why would you be doing that? I'm a little bit concerned.
I was at a workout and they had Journey playing, and I kept thinking it was Steven Tyler, but it's not Steven Tyler.
No, it's Steve Perry.
Steve Perry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they had some fabulous hits in the 70s and some terrible ones in the 80s.
Maybe anyway, he might go in the title this week.
Well, perhaps. Yeah. Maybe he won the betting lines. We'll find out in the next segment. Stay tuned for that. I guess I've always been, you know, more of the Journey kind of guy. But I mean, you know, you ultimately want to win the thing. I totally get that. Of course, that's, you know, what we all want as fans. But it happens so rarely that if you're all about that destination, I think you're going to be disappointed most of the time. And why even bother if you can't enjoy even a season like this one, where it's not been terribly gratifying. You know, let's be plain about that. There's been a lot of disappointment, a lot of bad luck, and just a lot of play that we're not really accustomed to seeing in a season in which Aaron Rodgers starts all the games. And that's been hard. But, you know, I think you enjoy the successes more when you go through seasons like this. I mean, if you always were there, I think you would lose some of the appreciation for when you do get there. And I think that's happened for a lot of fans in terms of the playoffs. I mean, people were, I think, kind of bored with that. They weren't satisfied just getting to the NFC Championship game. It wasn't good enough anymore. Well, you know, right now that sounds pretty good, especially when you hear people saying, and I've heard this a lot of places, that, man, the Packers are at least 2 years away from, you know, being in contention. And I think they mean contention even for the playoffs. And that is really hard to imagine after 8 consecutive years in the postseason. It's hard to imagine when you have, you know, Aaron Rodgers playing even at, you know, 35 now, going to be, you know, 36 by the end of next season. That's not ancient. And you'd like to think that, you know, with some changes, a halfway decent, you know, they have 2 first-round picks, and, you know, they can do some retooling. They make a couple of free agent signings because they have a general manager who kind of believes in that now. You know, that this team could be in contention for the playoffs next season. And to me, as a fan, that's what I want from my team. I want them to be in the conversation. And if they don't win it all, so be it. But I want them to at least be relevant. And it would be hard for me to be a fan like it was in the 70s and 80s when, you know, you just didn't ever think that your team had a chance of being relevant toward the end of the season. And I thought that Aaron Nagler had a good comment, and I think you remember when Lindicky played, right, for the Packers.
I sure do. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the opening comment from Nagler was, the game yesterday said, if anyone is wondering what it was like to watch Lindicky's Packer teams, it was a lot like that. And, you know, after I read that, I thought about it, and you know, I thought that was a really good observation, except Lindicky would have probably thrown a couple of picks along the way, too. That was kind of how the game was in those days. But just a hell of a lot of passing. And, you know, Rodgers puts it up, 57 times yesterday? You know, there was just a whole lot of, passing and action and moving the ball up and down the field. And but they have 500 and some yards of offense. I should have it in front of me. I think it was like 550 yards of offense. It was really impressive, and not much defense, which was also like it was when Lindicky was the Packers quarterback. And don't forget, the lack of defense came against the team that came in ranked 30th in the NFL in offense. So, you know, the Packers were hurting on defense when, you know, a rookie quarterback with a 30th ranked offense is able to move it up and down the field and rack up 128.4 passer rating. It was that kind of game, but the Packers came out on top. Did it hurt their draft position? Yeah, it certainly did. But to me, it's gratifying, you know, that they won the game. And I think there's something satisfying about that. And I think your reaction day was a lot like mine. And hey, they won. Great. You know, let's go have a sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me pull the Super Bowl off the table and just say the journey in 2019 might be more, you have a better chance of enjoying that journey with a higher draft pick. So let's say next year they're picking 7th and there's one more stud pass rusher still in there. They take them. And then next year we get to enjoy having, you know, pressure on the quarterback, which we rarely see now without a blitz. I mean, imagine,
you don't like Kyler Fackrell, Dave? Come on.
Well, someone needs to bookend with Kyler because Matthews is probably not going to be back this year.
That's true.
Plus, did Matthews – I saw his number once in a while, but is he on the tackle chart at all? Matthews?
I did not see he was all but invisible. I did understand that he got an owie at some point and was out for a bit. But he did not make his presence well known.
He is not listed as having a single tackle or anything on the defense. Every once in a while I saw, hey, who's 52? Oh, yeah, that's Clay Matthews.
That's right.
but instead they drop to 14 and they get, say, an offensive tackle. Which they do need, and say, you know, he's fine, but, you know, he's not an elite player like a top 10 player. Now, top 10, top 7, top 14 – I mean, I don't know. Jair Alexander, maybe he was a top 10 talent, and they just got him at the level they had. I think they picked 14 last year. So it's no guarantee that the seventh player is going to be better than 14th. I get that. But your chances are improved. And then you do, as you go down the rounds, too, you're 10, potentially 7 to 10 higher. But your journey, so it's not just about the Super Bowl, because you're right. It's not like I'm saying if we don't win the Super Bowl, it's a wasted year. I didn't have any fun. And I'm trying to be more journey-like. But I just think their chances for the future are better with the higher draft pick. Once you're eliminated from the tournament, it doesn't make sense to me. It's like, you know, in the military, if you want to win the war, but you're like, no, we want to win every battle. Well, you don't do that. I mean, sometimes you say, like, we're going to give up that piece of land so that we can win over here. You try to play your pieces correctly so that you win the total. I mean, get yourself in that best position. And right now when you're out... I mean, they are no longer in the tournament. They're done. It doesn't matter that they won yesterday. They got people injured. Maybe some people feel better. Maybe the people in the offices there in Green Bay are feeling a little bit lighter in their step as they walk around. I don't know. But when it comes to training camp, are they going to feel any different? The fact that they won this game versus they lost this game, I think actually is kind of stupid. The thinking that it's going to carry over to next year or
No. It does not carry over. What it did, and you know, this is about me, right? You know, and you and Joseph, who watch the games with, and Big Snake Man. I mean, it gave us 3.5 hours. I think it was 3 hours 45 minutes maybe yesterday of enjoyment. And at the end of it, our team won. And so it has no carryover for next year, but it did matter yesterday for that period of time. I sat in my lazy boy recliner with, you know, the blanket over me and
slippers. Slippers on.
I was wearing socks, which is unusual for me. But it's cold in Wisconsin now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I enjoyed that time. It was a pleasant experience. A lot of fun conversation with my son back and forth about the game, some of which I'll relate later on in the podcast. And it was enjoyable. Now, the fact that the game doesn't matter in the standings, it doesn't get them in the playoffs, it will not result in the Super Bowl. In fact, it may, in the bigger sense, hurt them, does not detract from the fact that for those nearly 4 hours yesterday, I was entertained and I had a good time. And I enjoyed life, you know, for what it was worth. That was it, okay? And so there is some value in that. Now, had they lost, it would have only – I wouldn't have crushed. It wouldn't ruin my day. But it was nice. It was a nice, pleasant thing to have happen, even though ultimately this season for my team isn't going to amount to a hill of beans, I guess is the cliche.
Yeah. I think the only thing that it did is it made the plane ride back from New York better.
Yes.
That's it. That's all that mattered. And, you know, the interviews were a little bit easier because the interviews, if it had ended after the third quarter, I think, you know, it's gloom and doom across that team. I mean, it was pretty dark. And now they can, you know, I guess maybe there's a couple guys who can look at Rodgers and say, man, that guy is a leader. That was a great comeback. That's what people are saying, right? They think he showed that this was not meaningless to him. He was a leader of men over there. He faced up a defensive lineman who hit his tackle. Which was an right. eye roller right. for me. I don't know how you felt about that.
Well, I think he felt he had to do that because he was somebody came to his rescue last week, right? So I think he felt he was obliged to do that.
Someone hit your teammate and you're standing right there. It's almost your obligation. You have to do something. And the bare minimum is to go up and put your hands on him and then jump back, which is what he did.
He's not stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy went to Cal for crying out loud.
I'd have taken my helmet off and clocked him right across the face.
The kind of guy that you are.
Yeah, I'm a destination guy. I want to put him in the hospital.
There you go. More likely you in the hospital, but still, but that's a destination. That is definitely a destination.
But
I tell you who was heroic in my opinion. Tremont Williams. I mean, he's as old as Aaron Rodgers is, and the guy – got his clock cleaned yesterday, but he played well on defense. I know he defended at least one pass. And, I don't think he bit through his tongue, but he, came down real hard on the tongue and he was being evaluated for a concussion. And he still came back out and still played well. I mean, I thought that was an heroic performance, too. So, it wasn't just Rodgers. It was the fact that a number of guys on that team showed up well enough to win a game on the road. They had enough pride that they didn't want to have a season go 0-8. When you're winless on the road, that would have been the first time since before I was born. So was the year before I was born the last time they had a winless season on the road. Didn't happen for them this time. So they showed some pride. They sacked up. It wasn't just Aaron Rodgers. And I thought that Rodgers, once he kind of got the rust off after the first quarter. I mean, he missed Davante Adams twice badly in that first quarter. And I thought, oh boy, this is just another downer example of how this guy is not what he used to be. But then he sacked up, he came alive and he did very well. His ultimate numbers were good. I mean, you're up over 100 passer rating, 103.8, which is good, although not as good as Darnold or Darno, as I like to call him. It was still a good performance. He 9 different guys. I mean, how long has it been since they had a game where there were 7 or 8 different guys getting receptions? They had 9 different guys getting receptions yesterday. And that was kind of the standard operating procedure in years gone by for Rodgers. Everybody gets involved. So that was really good to see. I think they might have tried to force it a little much to Davante Adams. 18 targets, that's a lot of targets.
Yeah.
To me, I thought his final line was going to read 11 catches for 17 yards. Because they were just, throwing these little short things to him so that he could sneak up on Sterling Sharpe's record. I think that was the number one intent, which is why Rodgers was going to him so much, is to get him that 112 receptions. As it was, he got to 111, and he'll get the record next week in Green Bay. As it should be, he'll do it at home. Still, with those 18 targets, at an average reception of 6.5 yards. They're playing for something else. There are things at stake for Devontae. He probably won't get Jordy Nelson's yardage record, but he probably will get the number of receptions, and that's not inconsiderable. Some of these other guys are trying to, get themselves together so they can be a factor for whomever is going to be the next coach. I thought we saw a couple of young receivers have pretty good days. I thought, despite the fact that there is no St. Brown, I thought that EQ did well yesterday, 94 yards and 5 receptions. Color me impressed. And he took, though, quite a vicious hit. Yeah, I hope that he's going to be okay with that. But still, he had a really good game. And I'm suddenly thinking that between him and EVS, you got a couple of guys that I think, are going to be a part of the equation going forward. And, Kumrao was also there. That wouldn't be so bad if he's your number 4 option. It just made me think about next year and, do you really have to go out and get a veteran receiver? And I'm not really sure that you might need a veteran tight end, but you won't need probably a veteran receiver. And I think they can put resources towards something else. If you've got Adams and St. Brown and Valdez-Scantling, Kumerow, you're probably going to have he's been on the injured list all season. The wide receiver from Illinois. And he's on the injured list. What does it matter, right? Yeah, that guy. You know, so they've got some options coming into next year that made me feel good watching the game, because I'm all of a sudden thinking, hey, maybe they don't have to blow a lot of money on somebody else's retread. You know, maybe they're, you know, not going to have to get Randall Cobb, you know, and even offer him a $5 million a year contract. You might not need that, because Rodgers looked pretty comfortable throwing to those guys yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the draft, if that's true, I didn't even think about Cobb, but yeah, when you have, you just listed down, I guess, your four or five receivers, do you need to add another star and push everyone back? Or can you use that high pick on another need, a safety, a pass rushing linebacker? Your offensive line needs to be retooled. So do you need to spend kind of that full draft and in those specific areas, and then stay your running back and your wide receivers? Are they more or less set? I kind of like to think, though, I think the last few years I thought they should go out and get a really, really good wide receiver. So you got Devontae and someone else that is just your stars. And your 3, 4, and 5 are really, really good. Like, to be excellent at one thing. Like, and it, obviously we have Rodgers, who I think still has something in the tank. You know, make the passing game something that you're not just great at, you know, that you're excellent at. Like, you're just so above everyone else. That's how you win games. So getting a wide receiver, I guess that will be interesting to see which direction they go. Because, I mean, a lot of it depends on, does St. Brown and Valdes-Scantling take the Adams route of, you know, this year they're shaky, next year I guess they'd be worse, according to, I guess, different than Adams' route.
I hope so, yeah. His second year was not good.
It was bad, yeah. So it's more of an ascending ladder for these guys. Yeah, then they can go 3 or 4 deep that are really good. But the big deal, like something that you mentioned, is the fact that he threw to them. And the number of receivers. You're right, there was years with Favre and with Rodgers. Like, you get a graphic in the second quarter that said 8 receivers have caught a ball so far.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that it was just a regular. And I thought, I think it finally they talked about it in the game kind of late in the third or fourth quarter. And I thought, I don't remember the last time we've seen that graphic. Certainly not much this year, because he just doesn't throw it to these guys. And so I think that was a big part of why they ended up moving the ball, is he had to throw the ball into traffic and trust all his receivers, not just kind of focus on Devontae. But in the first half, weren't you kind of a little upset that it looked like the only reason that we're playing and watching this game is that we're just trying to get the ball to Devontae and beef up his numbers? I thought, I am not interested in watching that. I mean, I'm a big fan of Adams, as we met the guy. Yeah, he's
our guy. Yeah.
Bought the jersey, the whole thing. But and it's not probably a coincidence that he set the record the year he met us. I think,
of course, I think that's it. Well, when he met Dr. Calls, that was the thing for him.
He's the Santa, yeah, the Christmas touch he had.
Careful, the man's a gynecologist.
That's true. I was a little irritated by that. I thought, this is just going to be a kind of a sideshow of breaking records rather than playing a game. So, what did you think about? Did that make you upset at all when you sort of saw that happening?
There was pretty much nothing that could have upset me yesterday, because there's nothing at stake. It was watching football for the sake of watching football, and it was my team, and I was relaxed, and I was bantering with my son. Life was good. It didn't bother me, because I knew what they were trying to do with Adams, and I thought that was good. I mean, that made the game meaningful. It was a kind of a game within a game sort of thing. But I was too interested in what I saw from Jamal Williams yesterday. You know, I couldn't get upset about a lot of stuff happening in the passing game when this guy looked like, you know, he should be a 3-down back. And I'm thinking, you know, Aaron Jones, who? I mean, Williams looked great carrying the ball. He looked great blocking. He looked great catching the ball. The guy was a force. I mean, at 156 yards, I guess, of total offense, and, you know, ran the thing for over 6 yards a carry. He doesn't have breakaway speed. I mean, that, you know, is, I think, pretty obvious. But he runs extremely hard. He plays very hard. And I'm thinking, you know, Jones, I know people want to have him as, you know, the number one guy. I'm not so sure that he isn't the complimentary guy that can come in and, you know, get the breakaway runs. I'd like to see them both on the field. I think I've said this every week now on the podcast. I want to see them both on the field at the same time. I think that causes problems for a defense when you have two guys, you know, that can, you know, run. And although Jones is not nearly as good catching the ball, still, you know, he is a guy that can be a threat. And you put both of those guys on the field at the same time next year, I think that's going to cause a lot of matchup problems, especially if you have them both in the backfield and you split one guy out wide and, you know, what a linebacker is going to cover him. I mean, this to me, as I'm watching the game yesterday, I'm thinking, if Williams can be this kind of player, imagine how good they will be in the backfield, you know, when Jones is healthy and can play again. Of course, the fact that Jones was hurt again, and he's pretty much been hurt. He was hurt last year. I guess he was hurt in college. That might be one of the reasons why you want to be more selective with how you play him, because he's not a stout kind of guy. But still, putting him on the field more often with Williams, I was kind of thinking this could be real interesting. And the more weapons you put around an aging Rodgers, probably the better off you're going to be. So I wasn't getting mad watching the game. I'm seeing possibilities here and thinking that maybe these people who are saying, oh my God, it's going to be 2 years until they're relevant, I'm not so sure about that. With some, you know, decent draft choices and a couple of free agent signings, I think that they could be relevant again next year.
Well, they could take the route the Saints took, right? Because Saints had like this wonderful draft a couple of years ago,
yeah.
And right. Then all of a sudden they went from the playoffs to well, they should have been in the championship. They had that miracle in Minnesota. Now they're the best team in the league. And you know the Saints have something real similar. They have a really good quarterback that's getting older, should be wiser, and that running back situation is what they have with Ingram and Kamara, right? I think they right. would be a yep. good. Example of how you could use kind of a more powerful back and a more elusive back. Now Kamara probably catches out of the backfield maybe better than Jones, but if you focus on it more, maybe he gets better at it. He certainly is a great athlete and he's fast. But I wonder, how do the Saints play those two guys? Do they put them on the same time? Do they every series it's one and then the next series it's the other? I don't think they do that. That's the McCarthy kind of dumb way of doing it. But yeah, can they get them on the same on the field at the same time and create matchup problems? I mean, can Jamal Williams play a kind of a fullback if you have him on the same time and they go into their nickel, then you run at him and Jamal could be a blocker. I think there is a lot of possibilities. I think it's going to take a creative coach to do that and to get Rodgers on the same page too, because you start to have all these neat plays and Rodgers keeps audibling out to an out to Adams every time. Mm-hmm. It's not going to mm-hmm. go anywhere. So it goes back to what the coach. Who is it going to be? What kind of offense they're going to run? But yeah, I mean, they have some players in place that could make it a really interesting offense next year.
Yeah, I'm not seeing Williams as a fullback, like an I formation type fullback.
But could he? Two or three plays a game.
Two or three plays a game. Not on a regular basis. I don't think he's stout enough for that. He's bigger, I think, than Jones is. But I don't think he's the kind of guy that down after down is going to be.
No.
You know, a big enough guy to absorb a lot of blocking. Now he's good at picking up the blitz. In fact, I just happened to be watching the replay of the game right now, and he just picked up the blitz. He's a willing blocker. I think he's capable. What I'm seeing, Dave, is kind of that split back deal, and I don't know why teams went away from quarterback under center with two backs split behind him. I mean, that was kind of the classic San Francisco 49ers West Coast offense back in the day. And I don't know why that became discredited in the modern game. And so maybe this is, you know, ridiculous and it's just not going to work. But I'm thinking having those guys there creates a lot of opportunity to say, well, if we run, which one's going to run? They both can run. Not like now where you have a fullback in the backfield. And you very rarely is that guy run. You know, maybe once or twice a game, he's there like another blocker is what that guy's there for, or maybe he's going to be able to catch a couple of screen passes. But if you have two legitimate running threats, and that I think gives diversity to the running game. But then if you motion one of those guys into the passing game, that creates, again, matchup problems. This may be too simplistic, but when you have two guys that can play, get them on the field at the same time and see what kind of matchup problems you can cause for the opposition. I'm infatuated with this idea, and I would like to be able to see some system that gives this a try.
Yeah, and I think what we would see in the future then is Rodgers has thrown to eight different guys. There are a couple of times in the Sherman, Holmgren, even McCarthy early on, where it felt like everything you did, the defense was reacting the opposite, or you know they were reacting to the play before, and you were doing something totally different. We've completely gotten away from that, I think, the last few years, where it feels like we do the same thing every single time. You know, you can kind of, once you see the way we're lined up, it's defenses have kind of figured us out, and we are not doing much to try and disguise or try to beat it. So, yeah, I think giving yourself a lot of interesting pieces like that, having two runners, kind of your thunder and lightning kind of a deal. Mm-hmm. You know, the right coach, right, that's offensive mind. If Rodgers can be more accurate in the future, I think it could be real interesting. I agree that the idea that they're 2 years behind, and now the defense being good, maybe that does take 2 years, but making the offense better or back to where it was, I don't think we necessarily need a two-year blueprint to get there.
Well, on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, it's really hard to know the group of anonymous players that lined up.
My goodness,
play.
Yeah.
You know, you really can't project that group forward because there is going to be a lot of change there. And some of it, though, is caused because guys are hurt. Kenny Clark didn't play. He wasn't active for the game. Chances are that he's probably not going to play next week either. But he'll be back next year, and Mike Daniels will be back. And some of these guys who played yesterday, seem like they could be rotation guys. I mean, Montrevious Adams showed up yesterday, showed up against the run. I saw him, get some push against the pass. He didn't look like a cipher for the first time. And so maybe you have some depth there. Tony Brown is another of those guys. He wasn't drafted. My initial reaction for him was not great against, Detroit, where he, made that play and then stood over the guy and taunted him. But on the other hand, he does play with a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm, and he looks like a guy who might be able to, be a part of the depth kind of rotation as your number five cornerback, that kind of thing. So I think who we saw on the field defensively, half of those guys are either not going to be there or going to be maybe depth players. I mean, there's probably a place for Kyler Fackrell. But as a backup, I don't feel as bad about him being on the team as I did at the beginning of the season. Got 9.5 sacks now on the year. He may have a double-digit sack season. He's not a starter, but I think he's a credible guy that you can put on the field from time to time and not be embarrassed. Blake Martinez, had a sack yesterday, and he showed up again okay. I don't feel bad about him. What I'd like to see is the Packers bring back 52 and play him inside alongside of Martinez. I think they'd be a lot better team, but then you still have a problem. How are they going to fill the outside linebackers? Or will they bring in a defensive coach that plays a 4-3? I mean, that's a whole different question. I hope they don't do that because you have to retool so much. But I would be okay if they went with a 3-4 and they brought back Matthews at half his salary and had him play inside.
Yeah,
I think that would work out, probably okay for them. But you're still going to have to fill in, and probably not just the draft to get an edge rusher, but probably you're going to have to go shopping for that one, or maybe even make a trade, which happens so infrequently in the NFL. But you're going to have to do something because the roster does not have a genuine bona fide linebacker who can apply down-to-down pressure against the pass.
I was looking at the defense that played yesterday and who may have tackles. Can you name the starting lineup in week one for this team? I mean, if you go along the defensive line.
Muhammad Wilkerson.
Right.
Kenny Clark.
Mike Daniels.
And Mike Daniels. Okay, that was the defensive line.
Okay.
Linebackers. Did Nick Perry start the season or was he hurt?
I'm pretty sure Nick Perry did, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if he was already hurt. He's hurt so much,
Yeah.
And then, of course, Clay Matthews. Inside, I imagine they would have had Martinez, but who played next to him? Morrison? Was he already on the team then?
Yeah, maybe he was on the
because Jake Ryan was already on the IR at that point.
Right.
And defensive backfield would have been HaHa Clinton Dix, who I don't know if you probably didn't hear Steve Zabin's podcast. He's a Redskins fan, and he absolutely blew up HaHa Clinton Dix.
No surprise here. I will have to listen to it. Well, I just saw the Redskins release their other safety, DJ Swearinger.
Oh yeah,
he criticized their defensive coordinator, and apparently they just dropped him. So maybe we can get that guy. But yes.
Well, yeah, what you want is a locker room cancer because you can't have enough of those, right? Yeah,
that's true. We don't have enough. But yeah, so far Matthews Martinez played. And then in the backfield, you have HaHa. Bryce played yesterday, so he was starting.
But I don't think Bryce didn't start yesterday. He started the season.
That's what I mean.
Strong, yeah. But they played Jones started with Williams at safety, I think, yesterday.
That's correct. Yeah, but in the starting lineup you had, I thought, to be in the season,
game.
Bryce and HaHa, and you had Kevin King, and probably, do we have, no, Tron Williams was the other
Because I don't think they started Alexander didn't start, did he, the opening? I don't think he did. I think he was in reserve.
Yeah, I think.
So it was probably Williams and King, right? Yeah.
So of that starting lineup, who we played yesterday in meaningful minutes is really Martinez and Tremont Williams. I mean, Matthews played but was invisible, and Bryce played, but I think he's limited in his
– He's a backup,
He's a backup. So, yeah. I mean, so you talk about the defense and their overhaul. Which defense are you overhauling? I mean – if you get everyone back, it's a completely different defense than played yesterday. It's remarkable that they're not just giving up score after score on every single drive. Cause I mean, this is the B team for us. But I they gave up 38 points and they looked awful at times, but you know, when it counted at the end, they got, toward the end of the game, right before their field goal, they had three punts in a row. That kept us in the game. That gave us a chance to come back. And with really backups, I really hope they keep Pettin with our defensive coordinator. With some talent, I would love to see him be our defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think you want to hamstring a new coach though, and saying you got to keep this guy. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, we like what we saw, think about it, but it's your call. And I guess I like what I have seen of him, but you know, if you're going to hire somebody to come in, you got to give him the free rein to have his own coaching staff, especially if the guy's experience is more on defense. You know, he may have a particular kind of system that he wants to run, and then you have to go that way. For me, it would be best to keep, if not the entire defensive coaching staff, at least the defensive coordinator, and start from that point, because at least then you have some measure of continuity and stability, but a guy who's not too closely aligned with the previous regime. And by the way, that's probably the reason why Philbin will be a fill-in, is I think that they want to get a bit of a culture change. And even though this is Joe's first year back, you know, he's very closely connected to McCarthy and the previous generation of Packer football, and they probably want somebody coming in who's different and going to bring a different sort of vibe. But I think Pettin, though, isn't that closely associated, so I think keeping that is probably okay. But the rest of the coaching staff, you might just want different faces, different voices, different approach. They've already started some of that when they can, Winston Moss. And I wouldn't be surprised even if they kept Pettin if there weren't changes to the coaching staff on defense as well. And as you know, because you came into a situation at your job where you established, your own culture there. It's a very country club, lackadaisical culture, but it's a culture.
It's ours.
Nonetheless.
We own it. Right.
Exactly right. But I think that's what they want to do in Green Bay, regardless of what they bring in. They're going to want to bring in somebody that does it, his way, and give him that opportunity to do that. I still think that they can do it, though, if they keep Pettin around.
Well, speaking of country club atmosphere, should we take a break?
Yeah, my glass is woefully empty, and so we have to correct that. You know, the thing about Christmas, though, Dave, it's a time of giving, you know? And it's the time you look back over what's meaningful to you. You know, what was the year like? Who was important to you? What were, say, I don't know, the last 3 or 4 months like for you? And you think about what you like to do. You like to listen to podcasts? Well, there's Chris and Dave. I want to get those guys something for Christmas, but I don't know where they live. I don't have any information. But wait, don't they have a PayPal account? Well, as a matter of fact, we do.
And everyone loves money.
Everybody loves money. It's the gift that keeps giving, at least until you spend it, put it up your nose, whatever you do with it.
Or put it in the market. Oh,
well, man. that's a good idea right there. I think we might as well just start a fire instead. The market's today, too.
Awful.
Yeah. So anyway, PayPal, PackersTherapy@yahoo.com is our identifier on PayPal. So many people this year have been so kind and very generous. Remembering us at the holiday season, nothing says love more than giving Chris and Dave a few bucks via PayPal. So we hope that you will do that. And that will allow me to go buy more of this Pure Leaf tea that I like so well and fill my glass. And we're going to do that right now. And we'll come back, tie up some loose ends on the Packers' win over the Jets and get into the betting lines and talk about what comes next. We'll do all that on Packers Therapy next. Chris and Dave back with more Packers Therapy, talking about the Packers' overtime win over the New York Jets, 44-38. Got a couple things to wrap up here. I began the podcast talking about something that Aaron Nagler had mentioned. He does his gut reactions on Cheesehead TV after every game, and I mentioned the thing he had about Lynn Dickey. He also had another comment that I thought was very astute, and it was he commented on that 3rd-and-1 where all the wide receivers went streaking down the field and Rodgers ran around before throwing a last-second toss incomplete. It was the most 2018 Packers offensive play of the year. And I totally agree. And if we're thinking of the same play, it was the one Rodgers went back and he could stand flat-footed. I think they the Jets might have rushed 3, you know?
Yeah.
And he, what did he have, 7 seconds? I mean, he had all day. And could find nobody, at least no one to his satisfaction, because he was letting some guys run free again yesterday. And so then, you know, eventually, finally, somebody breaks through, and he's got to run, and he decides to kind of like do a little layup kind of thing where he's trying to just bloop it over a guy's head, and he winds up, you know, missing the receiver, who I think was Williams, like 3 yards downfield.
Yeah.
And I thought if there was a better metaphor for the Packers season, that was it. You know,
yeah.
He had time. I didn't see the all 22, but if you're trying to tell me that no one could shake free in 5 seconds, 7 seconds, oh, all right, fine. I guess I'll buy that. I guess I'll suspend my disbelief. Then he runs around, buys more time, and can't even connect on that like 4 yard little toss he did to Williams. I thought, yep, that is 2018 Packers football right there.
I thought the only thing that would be more 2018, it would be if we tied this game.
Well, you know, when they went to overtime, that crossed my mind. In fact, I said to Joseph, I said, yeah, gee, when's the last time a team had 2 ties in one season?
We start with a tie and end with a tie. Still have next week. Yeah, if we could end in a glorious tie next week, that would be just great. Well, the thing that I thought was so crazy about that was the fact that, I mean, it was what? It was 3rd-and-1 or 2? It was close, right?
Yeah.
And whatever the play was, they were all running downfield. And when he was scrambling for time, I don't know. None of them came back. They kept going downfield. I mean, they literally were like 50 yards down the field by the time I think he flipped that ball. Maybe at the end, from what I saw, I should check the all-22. But, I mean, I don't know what kind of design plays they are, but I mean, these guys must have played football in junior high, in high school, in the backyard, in college, and now they made it to the pros. So how many games have they played? Is there any common sense trigger in your mind that would say, hey, it's 3rd-and-2, he's scrambling, I'm not going to run another 10 yards deeper, I'm going to try to run towards space maybe a little bit closer or something, right? I would think that would be your natural reaction. And it really made me, you know, my criticism of the offense has been Rodgers doesn't throw the ball, He holds it too long, waiting for the big play. But when I looked at that, I thought, that's not Rodgers' fault. These idiots are running down the field and running and running and running. I thought that was crazy. I mean, why the coach wouldn't call a timeout, call the whole offense over and say, what is wrong with all of you? I thought that was terrible, and I thought that was – I'm glad that came up because I did. I thought – that was the point where I really thought, I really want them to lose now because whatever they've been doing this year is so broken, I just need to blow up the whole thing. But then it came back, and then things like short passes and quick throws to tight ends, they kind of came back in the third and fourth quarter. It was like someone was holding someone hostage, and they let them go in the third quarter so that Rodgers could play normal again. It was weird, but that play in particular I thought was very strange, and I think you're right. It was indicative of kind of this whole year.
There was another comment that I thought was terrific, and that my son and I are watching. Of course, we're kind of a little bit detached, you know, from the action. We didn't even have the sound up on the game, so it was just kind of us talking. And there's the long run back that the Jets have, and it becomes clear, you know, at some point, you know, that Roberts is gonna break, and you can just sort of tell.
Yeah.
And he breaks through about like the 45-yard line, and you know he's got to beat, you know, a very stoned Mason Crosby, so you know that's gonna go. And before the guy's even like at the 20-yard line, my son's saying, you know, this is really good for the organization overall. You know, I thought that was the brilliant Packer fan comment. Before the guy can even score, my son's commenting about, you know, this is really pretty good for the organization. Okay, you know, that's and as it turned out, they won anyway. But at that point, it sort of felt like they had just, if I'm not mistaken, they had just scored to make it, what, 14-7. It was the pass to Kumerow, I think it was. And it was on the ensuing kickoff that they ran it back to, you know, lose their advantage. So the other part of that I thought was great on that kickoff return was Crosby's reaction when they showed it from the end zone.
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay, so Roberts takes the ball, he breaks through, and, you know, he's got to beat, you know, the last guy, of course, is Mason Crosby.
Which you said, so the 45, it felt like it was on the 30. I felt he had broke all containment. It was like usually it's like midfield or something, and then it's a race to the end. It felt like he blew past everyone, like by the 30 or 35. He was past them so quick.
Well, but I'm just watching it again now, as a matter of fact, and yeah, it's at the 40-yard line where he breaks it. But the great thing is when they show it from the end zone, and you know, Crosby kind of does what kickers do, you know, that kind of vain attempt to, you know. And he misses him. As a matter of fact, he missed him at the 43-yard line.
All okay. Right.
And then when they showed the view from the end zone, the Crosby looks up, sees him, and just plants his helmet into the turf. You know, it's this great look of resignation. You know, he sees him running and just head face down right on the right on the turf. It was brilliant. I thought that maybe was in competition for the most Packers moment of the season. I know when they played Detroit the first time, that's how I felt watching Crosby kick that game. I wanted to plant my face in the turf at Ford Field. I mean, that was bad.
Yeah.
So that was one lingering memory as well. If you can go back, I don't know if you haven't recorded or not, but it was at about 5 minutes to go in the second quarter. And they show, again, the replay from the end zone. It is spectacular to see Crosby put his face in turf.
We should mention just special teams in general and how bad it was.
That's one thing I wanted to mention, definitely. So they gave up the touchdown. They allowed a 4th-and-1 fake punt to go. And they also had a fumble on a kickoff return.
Right.
So, I mean, all the way around, this was absolutely spectacular. I mean, it was an orgy of crappy special teams play. Now, I will say this though, because the guys that were playing special teams are usually not the guys that you want, you know, playing from scrimmage. And the guys we are playing from scrimmage right now are like third team guys, a lot of them. And so the guys playing special teams are the kind of the dregs. You are scraping out the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
You know, you are getting out you know, the Bock beer at the bottom of the barrel. And those guys aren't playing for a reason, and they showed why. I believe it was on the kickoff return, Eddie Pleasant, I guess, was the guy who really, you know, made the major gaffe on the Roberts kickoff return for a touchdown. And Eddie Pleasant, I mean, we didn't know who Eddie Pleasant was when we were at the game with Klaus, because Pleasant was the guy who, you know, dropped the interception against the Cardinals, the one that probably would have, you know, turned it around for the Packers. And then he also played the poor defense on the ensuing play. So he's, you know, he's the guy that makes the mistake on the kickoff return. And, you know, I mean, that's what you're going to get when you have, you know, cast-offs and retreads and, you know, guys who probably aren't going to be playing in the league next year on special teams. And that was never a unit that was very good anyway under Ron Zook. In fact, generally under McCarthy, I think they only had a couple of years where they were considered a top 10 team when it came to special teams. Most of the time, they were kind of in that bottom third of the league. So it was even worse, though, when you have lousy players playing those positions. And that's probably something else, Dave, that whoever is going to be the next coach, they probably want to look at that aspect, the third, you know, leg on the football stool, right? The special teams, and kind of do something to make that not a negative. Because when you're in the bottom half or the bottom third of the league, it's not just that it doesn't matter. It's actually a negative and it's hurting you.
Right. Yeah, I just can't figure out, is it Zook's fault? Because you're right, the dregs are playing defense. So the dregs of the dregs are playing special teams.
Yeah.
Like, we're having to really, as you say, scrape to find those guys to play. And Eddie Pleasant, what a misnomer. That he should change his name. But what is Ron Zook doing wrong? I mean, man, he got just crucified on Twitter. And I thought there were questions at Philbin's press conference after that they weren't absolutely directly saying, do you think you might fire Zook in a few hours? But it was pretty close. I mean, they kept bringing up special teams, and I think everyone knew what they were going after, but he didn't bite. But I thought the one unpardonable sin, which Philbin talked about, and maybe this is true, is when they – was it that kick or it was another? They kept kicking it to the five or, you know,
yeah,
right on the goal
yeah.
line. And why yeah. you wouldn't blast it out into the back of the end zone every single time with, you know, the Pro Bowl kick returner? I mean – I thought it kick it out of bounds if you have to, rather than kick it to this guy. So I don't know if they were like, let's directionally kick it left to about the two. If that's what Ron Zook was thinking after, you know, he clearly was torching us early in the game, then I would say, Ron, it's time for you to hit the showers and brush up your resume and do something else. But if it's just that, you know, we don't have the talent, then I don't know what coach, you know, can coach up a special teams. Yeah. You know, in a way that's his fault. But clearly it's been a problem for years and years. And I think it's Ted Thompson more than the special teams coach's problem. It's a talent problem. You got to have depth on your team, and that gives you good special teams, not that there's some kind of magic formula.
I have a theory about that. You know, under Ted, of course, the Packers were always among the youngest teams in the league, and their depth – were typically, you know, first and second year players, not experienced guys. And they tended to be players, you know, that didn't play a lot of special teams, probably not in college, and maybe hadn't really played a lot of special teams probably since high school. And because that was the way they built the roster, they didn't have depth of veterans, they had depth of young players. And those were the players that wound up playing on special teams. And I think that's the reason why they were rarely very good in special teams. This is only Gunnikin's first season, so it's hard to know how they're going to construct the roster going forward, if they're going to have a little more, you know, veteran depth in the future. And if that's the case, I think they'll have better special teams, just because the guys who are playing special teams have probably played there before, maybe even the NFL, and if nothing else, they'll have a little bit more experience, instead of, you know, having such a young roster all the time where the guys are throwing out there to play special teams just don't have NFL experience and they don't have special teams experience. So I think it's more a function of roster construction rather than scheme. Now, I know even less about special teams theory than I do about offensive or defensive theory. So I'm not probably the best guy to say it's talent versus scheme. I'm not even sure how you scheme a field goal, blocking alignment. You know, it just seems to be like, yeah, you get, you know, nine guys there that can block and one guy that can catch it and put it down and the other guy that can kick it. Yeah. It's
now go practice that. Yeah, right.
You know, it's probably a lot more complicated than that. And I know that there are teams that like to do certain things to block it and all that kind of stuff. But to me, I think you are just better at that sort of thing with guys that, you know, have been attuned and have done that kind of thing before, whether it be, they've seen fake field goals, fake punts. You know, they just kind of know what to do because they've done it before. And when they snuffed out that fake punt against the Bears a week ago, the guy that saw it, you know, was a guy that they had picked up who had, you know, played special teams before, and he kind of knew what to look for. He's the guy that called it out, and he's the guy that made the play. I don't think that typically the Packers have had those kinds of players playing special teams.
And injuries probably are a major factor too, right? If you have few injuries, then maybe you can have guys play special teams consistently through the season rather than have say, hey, it's time for you to come up and play safety, and maybe you're not going to be on special teams. It's going to be somebody else. So the more injuries they have, and they always have a ton of injuries, maybe that's a factor too. So I just felt the one time where we kicked it to him on the five, I thought Philbin said something like, we tried, but we don't always execute it, meaning that Crosby couldn't kick it that far in the cold.
Well, it was probably lucky he could even see the damn ball as high as he was.
That's true. Yeah. Is it legal in New York right now?
I think they were in New Jersey. It was probably fine there.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, so special teams, it was as bad a special teams as I've
special.
Ever seen. They were not special. And Eddie was not pleasant, that's for sure.
The last observation I had on the game, and maybe you have more, but I want to make sure I say this, because this year I think the Packers have been very unlucky when it comes to officiating calls. But this game yesterday was the exact opposite of that. I thought the Packers really benefited more so than the Jets did with the officiating. I mean, they got some calls to go their way. Now, I know a couple went against the Packers that were kind of questionable, but by and large, the Packers had no reason to fault the officiating. And that has been something that I think has cost them a couple of games this season, where calls have gone against them. I think of the ball that bounced off the player in Detroit on the punt that shouldn't have been called that way, and of course the Clay Matthews calls, one of them that cost them a win. I mean, there's been several times this season where they've had big calls go against them, but yesterday was, you know, shoe was on the other foot. I think the Jets had 16 penalties, and I thought they were getting jobbed more so than the Packers were. And I just want to be fair with this, because I've been lamenting the officiating this year, and this was the opposite yesterday. The Packers, I think, I'm not saying they won because of that, but I think it was definitely a contributing factor in the win that I think the officiating went their way.
Yeah, even the Jets coach complained about it in his press conference. He said it's hard to beat two teams, the Packers and the striped shirts. So he was pretty upset. There was like three or four pass interference in a row, it felt like, at the end of the game, and really helped. And I was thinking as I was watching it, how happy I would have been if I really cared about this game. But because it was, I didn't care as much about the win or loss, I kind of thought, yeah, that went our way. Big deal. But you're right, when it seems to matter, it doesn't seem to happen that way. That's worth it. I have a couple things, too, before we turn over to Betting Lines.
But I want to make sure I understand something. The Striped Shirts, is that the name of your barbershop quartet?
It is, and okay, and we were playing against the Jets. You didn't see us out there, but we had a side game going on.
I thought you guys sang the national anthem, but maybe I'm wrong.
I didn't call them the Striped Shirts. Was it Todd Bowles? He called them the Striped Shirts.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you for clarifying.
I'm quoting in that instance. I saved a couple of tweets I thought were interesting. One, there was a survey asking, "Are you happy the Packers beat the Jets?" You want to take a guess
yes.
at what percent were happy?
This is the one I've heard on one of the post-game shows. It was I want to say it was like 60-40 that people were disappointed and wished the Packers had lost.
Well, this is 109 votes, and 72%, are happy that they won.
Happy they won?
That they won.
Oh, I forget what station this – I think it was The Fan.
This is from The Fan.
They said that they had 2,000 responses, and it was the other way around.
Oh,
it was like 60%. Yeah. So it was – in fact, I heard it this morning, I think it was, where they said that they had 2,000 responses, and it was 55 or 60% were disappointed the Packers won.
Yeah, I don't – this is as of 7 a.m. this morning, but it's 72% said they're happy. I thought that was interesting. I thought it would have been more of a 50-50. But maybe it just depends on your survey sample.
It depends on which bots are the voting. Yeah, the
Russian bots. Yeah, most of these are Russian bots, I'm sure. I don't know if this is true. This is another tweet that the Broncos. I guess we're paying attention to the Broncos and the Raiders game. If the Broncos beat the Raiders, is there a Monday night game? There's not a game tonight, is there?
I think so.
Is there? Is that the Broncos Raiders tonight? On Christmas Eve?
I think that they've got a night game. And I think there's also a Monday night game next week, too, I think.
All right, so if the Broncos beat the Raiders, the Packers will go into Week 17 with the 13th pick. If the Broncos lose, they'll have the 14th. I don't know. Now, I've seen different things, but it looks like kind of around that 13th, 14th pick is where we go. And the best the Packers can do now is maybe get up to 10. So I've seen some different. I don't know if you've seen the exacts on those.
Yeah, I know right now I think they're at 14. And Broncos and Raiders play tonight. I guess they can move up. But I think it's hard to know if they lose next week how much potential they have. I think the best they can do is – did you say 10? I think that's what I heard too.
Okay, 10 or 11. Yeah. Actually, 10 would not
be
bad.
The best. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the best they can do. If they win, I think they might, depending on how things fall, but like 16 or 17. If they win tomorrow.
If they win next week.
Next week.
Yeah. So that 16-17 is really disappointing. Having to go through this awful season and then actually have kind of a middle round draft pick, it feels wrong. But listen to this stat, Chris. The Packers' 35 first downs were the most for any team this season and the most in the Super Bowl era.
What?
Plus Aaron Rodgers made NFL history. This isn't The Onion, is it? Plus, Aaron Rodgers made NFL history in some horrendous kickoff return numbers. The numbers, blah, blah, blah. But the Packers' 35 first downs were the most for any team this season and their most in the Super Bowl era.
Okay, the Packers. Okay, now that I believe. But this season, I mean, like with the Rams and the Chiefs and all of these creative, high-powered offenses, wow, that's remarkable.
I was floored by that. And then the other, I thought this was an interesting question. Is it just me or did the Packers have a really tough schedule this year? They played Seattle, who's actually pretty good. The Bears are good. Yep. The Patriots, the Vikings, the Rams, and even Miami. And I was kind of thinking of when they played them, too. I mean, Minnesota's kind of trailed off. I don't know if we've played any others, but just of when we played them. You know, Washington, it would have been much better to play Washington now than the beginning of the season, for sure.
Yep. Yep.
So we got unlucky. The one lucky thing that, other than the refs, that we got this game is we finally won a toss in overtime.
Yeah.
That was, they said, I think it was six straight that we had lost the toss, including two playoff games.
Yep.
Something like that. And, of course, we win the toss in a meaningless game. But it's true. You know, you think of luck for this team over the last 10 years. There's certainly been luck in some areas, but the coin toss has been a killer.
I'm glad you mentioned this, Dave. Because I was thinking about this today, as a matter of fact, because somebody was talking about the Bears have San Francisco or maybe it's the Rams have San Francisco to end the season, and I was thinking at last year or when the schedule was announced, however long ago that was, people were saying, "Oh man, cake for the Packers." I mean, it's one of the easiest schedules in the league, and I thought, you really can't make that judgment until teams get their rosters set and until injuries become clear and momentum takes its course. You know, we say it every year, and I certainly do, because it is not who you play. It is when you play them. And the Packers caught a lot of teams at a bad time, and I think that was a contributing factor. I mean, facing the Redskins when they did, when the Redskins were relevant, would be a lot different than if they were playing them in the last couple games, you know, of the season. And it's the same thing when, you know, teams are playing bad. If you face them at the wrong time of the season, or depending on your injury situation too. So, I mean, that still doesn't explain losing to the Cardinals at home. But there are other factors involved in the schedule, and it's not just the teams that you're playing, when you play them, what kind of year that they're having, what kind of year are you having? You know, when does your bye week come? All of that stuff is an enormous factor. And I think in addition to being not great this season, I think the Packers were unlucky with the schedule and unlucky with penalties.
Yeah, especially the Minnesota one. That really, I think, took the season south, that game. Yep. Losing that game and the length of it, I don't know how many people we got injured that game, but it was a hard-fought game right away. And I think we look back at 18, I think that was a key point. If we had won that game as we should have, I think maybe the season could have turned out different. But
well, whatever happened to all of the roughing the passer penalties that were so popular, you know, when the first month of the season, and then now they've gone away. I mean, yesterday Rodgers got drilled after he threw the ball, and you know, I mean, early in the season that would have been a penalty.
But for sure, well, yeah,
they're calling the game differently in the last month of the season than they did in the first month of the season, and it turned out that hurt the Packers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a weird year, for sure. Weird year all the way around. The markets, the Packers, life in general. 2018, I'm ready for 2019. How about you?
Well, I don't think we have any choice because in a week and a day, we'll be there.
Okay, good. Well, are we ready for betting lines?
Well, yes, I want to mention one thing because I am watching the replay of the game. I want to talk about James Brown for a second. Not the hardest working man in show business, the great godfather of soul. I'm talking about the James Brown that is the halftime show. Did you happen to
That's the other Fox guy. James Brown went to CBS. You're talking about...
Oh, okay. So who is the guy on Fox now?
I'll have to look it up, but go ahead with it.
Is he a guy, maybe he's a homeless man getting his clothes at Goodwill. Yellow shirt, a yellow and blue cross-striped tie, an ill-fitting jacket, and brown shoes. I mean, did somebody say, we got just the look for you? And trust me, this is au courant. You're going to like it. You're going to look good. And then they do the full-length shot of this guy. It made me feel better about myself.
Okay. Kurt Menefee.
I mean, that's just bad.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, why do you let people dress you like that? Oh, my God. I felt horrible for the guy. He looked like a nice, friendly guy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we really got to – yeah. And you're right about James Brown, not the godfather of soul, the other guy. Yeah, it is Menefee. That's bad.
Yeah.
Man, someone's got to do an intervention to help that guy out.
Well, I know it's more like when they have the announcers that are at the game. It'll be, you know, like Daryl Johnston or
what is up with that
Troy
guy?
Aikman. But they usually are, they wear like some kind of plaid shirt with a paisley. Oh. Like, it's
what
like,
is that?
I can a feel like they're
wear kind of thing.
Yeah.
A puffed pocket.
It's like they're violating all the fashion things I was told. They just like plaids with stripes and like all kinds of stuff going on. I agree. Maybe they can push it forward. They're on TV. They're making a ton of money. They can afford to do whatever they want.
Well, maybe at least get a jacket that fits Kurt properly, you know? Yeah.
Well, it'd be a big jacket.
Well, it'd be a big jacket, but, you know, as it was, he looked like a Johnsonville that he was jammed into that jacket. I thought maybe if you poked him with a fork, you'd get that sizzle sound would come out of him, you know? It was unfortunate, and I felt bad for the guy.
Oh, well, he's doing just fine, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know, Dave. Just based on his wardrobe, I'm not sure.
All right, betting lines?
Let's do it.
All right, so I want to go back to week 15. We went through the answers, but we didn't say who won that week.
We have to do that, yes.
We do have a winner, and he'll have to get a week comped maybe in the off season. We'll figure something out. But the winner for week 15 was 7 correct. He tied Jared Van Cleave, but the winner was Jeff Tum, who got 7 correct and was closest on the tiebreaker, which was number of rushing yards for Chicago. He had 116. I think the answer was 120 or 97, something like that. So Jeff Tum won week 15. Are you ready for week 16?
Well, I just want to make a comment on Jeff Tum. Whenever my Tum is upset, I always go to his product. Settles me right down, and I appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you. And I did tell him on Twitter, the good news was the little scrape with the law this week. There was a bit of a, well, I guess you call it a raid, at the hotel and casino. So it was probably for the best that Jeff was not there. And we will make good, though, in the off season, Jeff. You will have your opportunity to enjoy the presidential suite at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino in beautiful Las Vegas.
All right, so this week we had low participation. I think people are petering out to the end of the season. We had 22 people play. Let's go through the lines. Here we go. We do have a single winner again. The first question we asked, what would be the quarterback rating for the Green Bay Packers, which turned out to be Aaron Rodgers?
Well, okay. Now, in my defense here, I want to be clear that I wasn't sure he was going to play, or even if he did play, if he played the whole game. I just want to get that out there.
Your line was 86, and it was 103.7. So actually, a few people took the under. There's some very negative Nancys out there that thought even worse than 86. But
I just want to be clear on this point, though.
All right, fair enough. Number two, rushing yards for Jamal Williams. You set the line at 68.5. It was 95.
Yes.
So overcut that one. Number three, number of receptions, not Cobb, Graham, or Adams. You set the line at 11.5. And was it 23? Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
That's 10.
I did not envision 9 people catching passes. Did not see that coming.
Jamal Williams got 6. Kumerle, yep. 3. Yeah, it's that. And you know what? That is a big deal. I think that's why they won the game. Number four, number of plays greater than 30 yards. You set the line at 1.5, and they had 3 of them. Can you think of them all with 30 yards plus?
Well, Kumerle was one.
Yep.
The St. Brown with a catch of like 30-some yards.
Yep.
And it wasn't Devontae.
MVS.
Oh, it was MVS.
MVS had a long
catch. I got 2 out of 3. That's not bad.
Not bad.
I think 2 out of 3 ain't bad is what Meatloaf told us.
So. Okay. Number 5, how many interceptions would Green Bay have? We thought Darnold might throw a few. He actually looked really good to me.
I thought he did, too. There wasn't a lot of pass rush. In fact, I saw that he was only hit twice. There were 2 sacks, and those were the only times he was hit the entire game.
Is that right? So you set the line at 1.5, and they had no interceptions. How many tackles from the dynamic duo of Lowry and Lancaster? You set the line at 7.5, and they had 9. That's good.
Okay. Now, that doesn't surprise me because Lowry, I saw Lancaster out there, but Lowry, I thought, was playing very hard and even trying to give some pass rush. He was doing a good bull rush, at least on one occasion. I think Lowry's a guy that you don't want him starting out there, but I think he's a good depth guy to have around.
Yeah, I think that's right. Number 7, how many total points for Mason Crosby? You set the line at 11.5, and he had 12. Not bad.
Now that is nails right
there.
Yeah,
right. 7.5, will Kaiser play? The answer was no. Yeah. And this is 7-3-4s. Would they ever run a trick play? And Mike said no, and I don't think they did anything tricky, right? Mm-mm. I think it was right down the middle. Joe Philbin is not using his creative sense. And then this is interesting. So Green Bay total yards. You said 384. I said 350. It was 388.
I thought it was like 500 yards.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Maybe he was thinking – what did he put down here?
No, it was
yards for Green Bay
because they had 127 yards on the ground and 442 yards passing.
So where did 388 come from, do you think?
And then you subtract the sacks. 388. Was that the Jets yards? That might have been the Jets yards.
I had total for let's see.
Okay, I'm looking now at the official total yards. Packers 540 and the Jets 370.
All right, I think the winner stays the same. So it doesn't matter if it's he had the highest guess. And the winner this week is Jerry Adams. Had 7 correct. He selected 389 yards total offense. That was pretty good.
Jerry Adams.
He is.
Isn't he the? Isn't he the head of the IRA, the Provisional Irish Republican Army? Look it up. I'm pretty sure he's the.
That's so obscure. I would have no idea.
I believe it's Jerry Adams. He's a terrorist.
You think I have a known terrorist listening to our podcast? That's.
Well, why wouldn't why?
They use the podcast to fight terrorism. We've always said not to encourage it.
Well, I mean, maybe he loves his American football.
Maybe he heard they played it for him in the. During his when he was detained during his torture,
his imprisonment in H block.
Yeah, and it's like the Stockholm syndrome. Now he loves us.
I want to say Jerry Adams is an Irish Republican politician who was the leader of Sinn Féin political party between November of 83 and February of 2018.
Now, so he's probably a wonderful person. We should take that all back. It's Jerry Adams.
It's got to be the same one.
No.
I mean, there's not a second Jerry Adams.
Jerry, I apologize. You feel free. You can spend 2 weeks in the casino, hotel and casino, for this harassment that you're taking.
Well, look, this is a guy who's been in prison in H block. I don't think we want to punish him again.
Okay. Fair enough. So Jerry's our big winner this week. Are you ready to do this week against the Lions, the last betting lines of the year?
I was born ready, Dave.
All right. Number one, total catches for Davante Adams.
Well, obviously they're going to feed him the ball at least for two passes, so he gets that record. But, you know, I get the sense as though Aaron Rodgers likes him some Davante Adams. Can't blame him. I don't think he's going to be targeted 18 times, but I think he's going to get the majority. It'll be probably double-digit targets. So I'm going to set the line at the number of catches, not targets, right?
Right.
I'm going to put the line at 8.5.
8.5. I'm taking the over.
Okay.
I think you're right. I think he wants to get the record and then some. Especially at home, I think it'll be a joyous occasion to see him get that record. Number two, total yards for Aaron Rodgers, passing and rushing.
Yeah, he had a terrific game running the ball. I'm glad you mentioned that, because he not only had a lot of yards, he ran with authority, and yeah. He seemed like he was really moving well. If that knee's a problem, it certainly wasn't looking like it when he was running the ball. And let me just double check his, what did he have, 32 yards. It seemed like more, even.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Yeah. So 32 yards running, and he had 442 passes.
Is that because the sacks subtract from that, maybe?
Yeah, the sacks subtract from the total passing yardage. They do not subtract from his personal passing yardage. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So 32 plus. So I don't think he's going to go 374 again. I don't think is going to happen. And I still think that they're going to try to get, you know, Kaiser in there. Maybe we'll see Kaiser Wilhelm. There's a little Germany reference for you there. So I'm going to say, I'm going to put it at 360.
I'm going to take the under. Number three, how many penalties on special teams?
Boy, I don't know if they had this week. They didn't have a lot this, well, at least not compared to New York. But they're usually good for several. I'm going to say 2.5.
2.5. I'm going to take the over, since I said this topic. I think they are going to go out with a bang on special teams and have three or more penalties. number four, total yards for Jamal Williams, both catching and receiving, or rushing and receiving.
Yeah, he's kind of their whole show. I mean, do they have another running back? I'm not even sure that they do. I mean,
yeah,
the only two guys to get carries yesterday were Williams and Rodgers. So Williams, I'm guessing, to the extent that they run or pass to the running back, it's going to be him. I guess Vitale had one catch yesterday.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So, but he's I don't anticipate him getting any carries. So he had what? He had 21 this week. That doesn't sound bad to me. I'm going to put that at...
No, it's yardage, not attempts.
Oh, yardage. Oh, damn it. Okay. So the yardage was 156. I don't see that either. I'm going to put that at 94.
94. All right, I'm going to take the under on that one, since all the balls we fed to Adams this week. Number five, How many people will catch a ball for Green Bay? We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. Yes, 9. So
I don't see that either. But I could see 7. I'm going to put the number at 6.5.
All right, I'll take the over. See if we can go with the trend. Number 6, quarterback rating for the Lions. I assume it's Stafford, but I don't know what they're doing over there. So I'll just say for the Lions combined.
Yeah. And he does throw some picks, which will kill you. But there's going to be no pass rush probably from Green Bay because that's what they do. If they couldn't get any pass rush against the Jets, I can't imagine them getting a lot more against the Lions playing on Sis grass. So he won't be under pressure. He'll probably get a lot of yardage. He does have a tendency to throw some picks. Let me put his passer rating at 105.
105. I'll take the over. Okay. Number 7, number of turnovers that Green Bay will have. I want to end on, this is a team that got so few turnovers. Can they squeak out any turnovers against the Lions?
All right, so not that they will commit turnovers. How many will they get?
Get, right.
Okay. Oh, man, they don't make splash plays at all. I mean, this is not a takeaway kind of team. I mean, I know they might get an interception because it's Matthew Stafford. Boy, I guess I'll put it at 1.5.
1.5. All right, I am going to take the under.
It wouldn't surprise me because I just think they'll get something lucky, you know, like a tipped ball or something like that, but I can't see him getting 2 is my point.
Yeah, not this year. 7.5, will the Packers score on their opening drive? Yes or no? I think they carry the momentum. If they can't carry it to 19, can they carry it at least to the next game?
It's a really good question because when they've been having their scripted plays, they've done pretty well. And if I'm not mistaken, they moved the ball okay in their first drive, but Rodgers missed a couple of passes.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll So is it score a touchdown or just score?
Score.
I say yes.
All right, I'm going to say yes too. And then 7.75, will Mason Crosby miss a field goal?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say yes.
I am going to say.
It's Detroit, so he's got to miss. Right?
I'll say no, just to be different. And then my tiebreaker, last question of the season. This is very 2018 to me. Total yards for Jimmy Graham.
Oh, man. 34. You know, that doesn't sound crazy. I'm going to say Jimmy Graham will have 43 yards.
43. I'll say 32. He's been a disappointment. I think of a lot of the things, and it looks like Rodgers is kind of trying to feed him as well. I guess he only had 4 targets, but it feels like he's looking for him a lot, and then he takes a sack. So those are your betting lines for the last betting lines of the season. Feel free to participate if you've done it before or if you haven't played before. This is a great time to start the last game of the season. All you have to do is send an email to Mike Miller at his email address. Are you ready for this, Chris?
I'm always ready for this.
Mike Miller, either you can just give me your answers or let him know you want to play and he'll send you a Google Doc or something like that. He'll figure it out. But you just got to email this email. It's mintnomiller@gmail.com. It's M-I-T.
N-O-M-I-L-L-E-R
at gmail.com. We can't seem to get in rhythm on that.
No.
We've had all season.
No, we can't. But mittnomiller@gmail.com. He is our man. And, you know, he came up with some kind of half-ass cockamamie excuse, which I... Like, what was it? The dog ate my homework. I think that's pretty much what it was. And if it was anybody but Mike, he'd be fired immediately.
Yeah, we're gonna dock his pay.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, I was getting prepared to offer the usual Christmas bonus that we do for Mike, but I'm withholding it this year because you know, he was delinquent, and we can't have that here at Packers Therapy.
Yeah, he gets
we're always, this is a finely tuned machine.
He can get the Christmas ham, but that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
We like to slaughter a pig. That's what we like here at Packers Therapy. Okay. So anyway, we hope that you'll play the betting lines. It's the last time. There's really no sense in setting them after next week's game because it's the last game of the season. Maybe we could look ahead to next season and set a betting line for next September, but seeing as how we don't know who they're playing in September, that would be kind of tough. Speaking of which, though, looking ahead, we will do a podcast next week to kind of wrap up the season. Next week, I'm kind of hoping to go position group by position group and think of, you know, are the Packers set at that, or is that a area of focus in the off season? So we can take a look at that next week. And there has been some discussion about whether or not we will do a podcast after the Packers settle on and hire a new coach. That would be probably a short one if we do one. But we are thinking about doing that because that would be big news in Packerland, and we may have thoughts, or we, you know, may be so disenchanted and moved on to other things at that point. And of course, Dave will be jumping out of a window with the way the markets are going. But
yeah,
I'll have to attend his memorial service because he's been a good friend for a long time. Okay.
Thank you.
Pop culture or – let's go with mail first.
Okay.
Because, you know, I can tell it's late in the season, in a lost season, because we had one email. it was our man Chris checking in with his iPhone. He wanted to make iChuck happy by using his iPhone. And he said – from his den of sadness, he texted us saying, "As much as I didn't want the team to win, I was really impressed by the three young receivers. And if you count Williams and Adams, they had five guys with 60 yards receiving. Good point, Chris. I wish Rodgers would be more judicial with the passing targets. 18 targets for Adams is a ton. Yes, indeed. Green Bay, invest in the O-line this draft, and the team can be top 10 offensively. Dave, do you think that the Packers, with an investment in the offensive line, can be a top 10 offensive team in 2019?
Well, the big question is, who is Aaron Rodgers now? His I think his ceiling is still where it is. It's pretty high, but I think he's setting new floors every year that he plays. And you know, if he's going to be that volatile, then I don't know I can say a top 10, but they could be very effective. I think the key will be next year is, you know, when you say who's the best players on offense, it's not just Aaron Rodgers and a bunch of other guys. It's like, well, Aaron Jones is really good. Rodgers is obviously good. We've got a couple of really good guys on the line. You know, we've got a really good core receivers. It's more flattened out of who we're relying on, not just on, hey, Rodgers, go make a play. I mean, imagine a game where it's a lot of quick throws and there's a lot of broken tackles kind of yards after the catch. We don't see that a lot because they're always downfield or along the sidelines. Maybe a new offensive scheme could utilize the athletes we have at receiver and running back. So I think it's certainly anything's possible. Are we right there? I want to see who we get in the draft. I think the key is, like you say, the offensive line upgrade is very critical.
Yeah, I think Chris has got a good point about the offensive line. They do need to invest in the offensive line. And I think a big part of the success is, I guess you could call it scheme, but I think what it really is figuring out who Aaron Rodgers is at this point in his career. I mean, we know who he was, and we know that a lot of the numbers that he racked up during the course of his career was because of these, you know, backyard, schoolyard kind of plays that he would do, you know, the kind of improvisational things that he could do and could do so well with receivers that were kind of mentally, psychically on the same page with him. But now that he's a little older, I think he's still pretty mobile, but he's not as mobile as he was. And I'm not trying to say he's chicken or yella or a coward or any of that kind of stuff, but I think he's taken a fair number of hits, and I think he's feeling pressure like Favre did later in his career. I think he's feeling pressure before it's there. And I think he needs a system that won't expose him to making that kind of decision is often where he's got to be looking at, you know, where the blitz is coming from. I think he has to have a scheme that allows him, that forces him, not allows him, forces him to make quicker decisions and get the ball out of his hand more rapidly, where you don't really have to worry about the rush as much because you have three quick options on pretty much every play, and you're not having to hold the ball as long and go downfield with it. And I think it's an acknowledgement that while he's still an effective player, I think he's still a good player, he's just not the player he was even in 2014. I think the Packers will be fine the next three seasons, probably with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. I just think they have to have a philosophy and a scheme in place that doesn't try to have him do the things that he used to do, but rather the things that play to the skills that he has now and going forward.
Which I think is still a guy that can throw, make any throw. He's got a super strong arm, and I think he's accurate and can be accurate. I mean, he's been inaccurate many times this year, but I think with the right rhythm, I think he can be a very accurate quarterback. So, yeah, I think there's still hope for him, and if he can kind of capture some of that magic, yeah, top 10 is right there.
Yeah, I would say top 10 will make them competitive. Then it's going to depend on, you know, what happens on the other side of the ball, and that a lot more complicated because they don't have an Aaron Rodgers on that side of the ball. I mean, Clay Matthews, I think they thought when they signed him that he was going to be kind of the difference maker on defense, and that just really never panned out for them on the defensive side. So I think it's going to be problematic for them on the defensive side. But like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, Dave, if they can do kind of what New Orleans was able to do with a draft that solved a lot of their problems, you know, I want to emphasize this point. You know, New Orleans, they did go 7-9 for three consecutive seasons, and people just seem to forget that, and they're talking about the genius and the greatness of Sean Payton. I'm not saying the guy's a bad coach, but I'm saying he wouldn't have survived in Green Bay with three 7-9 seasons. But they stuck with him, and it's worked out great, not because he got smart all of a sudden. It was because they were able to give him players that allowed them to have a renaissance there. And I'm hopeful that having a Gutekunst and, you know, perhaps a coach might be helpful, but I'm thinking more on the personnel side of things because I've always believed it's more about the players than the scheme. If they can continue what they started last year, whoever's going to be coach is going to be miles ahead, because I think that's the Packers' major problem is they don't have enough difference-making players.
Yeah. So let's keep our fingers crossed that that happens.
Yep.
And start all over next year.
Yeah. Well, we still got one game left yet for this year.
No, it doesn't matter.
Well, what does matter is how are you going to occupy this week off? I mean, I didn't work today. It's Christmas Eve. And I'm going to take the rest of the week off and the first half of the following week because it's New Year's. So pop culture is going to be what I'm going to be looking to do in the crappy Wisconsin weather. What have you been watching, viewing, reading, Dave, and what are your plans for pop culture coming up over the next week or so?
So there's a ton of TV, a lot of movies to watch. I don't know how much I'm going to spend doing any of that, but I know at a drop of a dime, if I want to find something interesting, Netflix and Amazon and HBO,
man,
they're there for me. But the big thing I'm going to do this break is play board games. And I might have mentioned board games too before. Dr. Klaus and I played a bunch when we were up in Wisconsin. He's a real board game. He's got a board game group, and he's gone to some international board game convention in Germany. So he is really into it, and he's pointed me in the direction of a few really good ones. And I have probably 6 or 7 or 8 games deep where we could play. And what's really cool, if you haven't checked out recently, a lot of the games that I like, they're cooperative. So you play with people and you're trying to achieve the same objective together rather than against each other. And a lot of them are story-based, so you play like 12 rounds of a game and they build on each other in a story. which I also really like. So my kids and my wife, we all like playing it. And I'll mention two of them. One we played this weekend, and there are, I think there are five or six more left, campaigns left. It's called Detective, real creative, Detective. And you play it together. You're part of a FBI investigation of a crime, of these different crimes. And you have an app on your iPad or your phone. It's a database. You enter stuff in. You get cards that give you information. You only have so much time. We have to do an investigation, then you have to file your report. It's like a long – we played it. We probably took us 4 hours to play just one of the campaigns.
My.
It was a long game. And but we really got into it, took lots of notes and stuff like that. So if you like that and have a group that's willing to invest the time, it's a board game called Detective. But if you want to do more of a party game, we played another one called Deception. I think it's Deception, the Hong Kong version or something like that.
And do you have to yell party when you're playing this game?
Why would you do that? Why would you say that?
You said it's a party game.
Oh, it's – yes, thank you. No, you don't have to, but I'm sure you wouldn't be penalized if you did.
Oh, okay, good. Thanks.
But it's a – you know, it's more of a casual family game that you can play. It is one of those where everyone closes their eyes. One becomes the murderer. Another is the accomplice. One is a witness. And then you have –
sounds like Clue.
Yeah, and then you have someone who is trying to lead the group without giving away of who is the murderer, and basically it's a game of deception and lying, trying to point around to – it's actually a really fun game to play four to probably eight or nine people. I think we had eight people that we played, and we played – each round is like 15, 20 minutes or so. That's really fun too, especially if you have family. I would say Deception, and it's got Hong Kong in the subtitle. I'd recommend that. It's a great game. And just check out board games in general. If you have a board game, like a legit board game store, go in there and ask questions. There are such cool games out there now. It's not like the Sorry or Clue or kind of those old ones. They're if you are willing to get invested in it and kind of read the instructions, which can be complicated sometimes, there's some really good games. So that is what I'll be doing this next week.
So what was the one – I was looking at the games that you guys – I think Klaus must have bought a bunch of them at Chicago or something.
Yeah.
But there wasn't one of like, you know, a passenger is flying in from the east and he's – you know, he gets sick on the plane and he's got a heart problem. And yeah, and it's like – it was like dark and one's like a homeless guy or something. And it's like, damn, these are not – happy games at all. You know, they're crisis kind of games, you know?
It's called Holding On, the Life and Times of Billy Kerr or something like
that. That's what...
Yeah. So we haven't played that. Wow. We might open that one. That one is this guy, he comes to your hospital unconscious, and you're trying to help his physical needs, but you're also trying to have him deal with three or four regrets in his life before he dies.
Now, nothing to me says Merry Christmas more than that board game right there.
Yeah, it looks really fun. You play as like you're the hospital where you're treating people at their end of life care, and
palliative care.
Palliative care, that's the word. But you're also trying to deal with his emotional state as well. So very cool, very interesting stuff. We might actually open that one up as soon as we finish up Christmas with the family. So,
and then you can watch Leaving Las Vegas to cheer yourself up.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just working my way through Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is just a wonderful television show. Rachel Bloom is just wonderful and creative, and the writing staff for this is just really, really a good show about modern romance, I guess you might say, and kind of from a more of a female perspective. I guess maybe it'll be a little bit like the flip side of the Aziz Ansari show.
Yeah.
But you know, that of course being from a male side of things, and this is from the female side. It's extremely funny, very sharp, well written, and I'm not a guy. I've never been a big musical guy, but every show has a couple of musical numbers in it where people break into song, and the songs are sharp and funny and on point, and they add to the theme of whatever the show is, and they are extraordinarily well done. I'm really enjoying this. I think I'm halfway through the second season right now. So I'll continue to work through that. So that's kind of what I'm – well, I'm also – I got to get to the Man in the High Castle. The second season has been out for a long time, and I've been busy with, I don't know, work or some crap like that. So I haven't been able to work through that. But I'm looking forward to, you know, just taking some time where I'm not answering, you know, emails and worrying about, you know, problems at the office and all that stuff. So that'll be good. And that's why I'm looking forward to the next Packer game, you know, because it doesn't matter if they win or lose next week. In fact, if they lose, it's – as my son pointed out, is, you know, Roberts was heading for the end zone. Well, this is actually good for the future of the organization. And so if they lose, it's not a bad thing. On the other hand, if they win, hey, my team wins. So it's kind of one of those things where you, as a fan, you don't lose. Either way, the game comes out. What we do know is that, you know, we'll have 3 hours of something that we enjoy. The best TV show, the best series on television, Packers football. It's the big season finale next week at Lambeau Field. Packers will be taking on the Detroit Lions in a game that means nothing for either team, not even last place on the line. You know, Packers playing out the string, but it will be interesting. And I know I'll be watching. I'm pretty sure Dave will be too. And we'll be back to talk more about it after the game is over. Till that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers there.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.